Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Good evening and welcome to Signs of Life, brought to you by Forever Family Foundation with our host, Bob Ginsberg. I'm Fran Ginsberg, and our show tonight is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Tonight's guest is Lloyd Auerbach, and if you have a question, comment, or would like to talk to our guest, the toll-free number is 888-627-6008, or you can instant message the studio at Signs of Life Radio on AIM. And good evening to you, Bob.
And hello, Fran, and I'd like to start off by wishing you a wonderful birthday.
Now I'll get more Facebook messages.
We'll see how many you can get.
I don't know. I already have 1,273 Facebook messages, and I plan on saying thank you to every single person.
Oh, you're going to be a late night.
It's always a late night.
Well, we didn't get to celebrate your birthday today, but at least we did get to celebrate a little bit yesterday.
Yeah, and that was good.
Yeah.
That was excellent.
You know, we're always on the lookout for different documentaries and movies and things that lend itself to the subjects that we study. And as you know, we have these afterlife discussion groups across the country, and sometimes they show these. And we watched a movie the other night. It's not a new movie. It was, about a year ago?
About a year old.
With James Spader, called Curtain Call. And I don't know, for all of you listeners that are over 50, you might remember a show from your childhood called Topper, where two spirit entities, husband and wife, I guess, were visited on a regular basis for the home.
It was the same concept. They lived in the house that Topper bought and moved into.
Right, and that's the same theme of the Curtain Call. You know, it was almost like a remake. You move into the house, and there's two entities from the golden age of theater, you know, that frequented this house. As far as they were concerned, they still live there, and James Spader was intruding. But wouldn't it be interesting? I mean, all these portrayals that we see, it's so crystal clear, you know, these entities are having conversations, and it's usually just the one person that could see them, and of course they look like a fool talking to themselves because nobody else could see them. But I wonder if it'll ever come a time when those in spirit can interact with people here with such clarity and with such...
Well, I believe that that's what's going to happen, but I think it's not because spirit can or can't do it. It's because we're not open to it. And I think this shift that you're seeing, where you're having a lot of people become more and more spiritual, they're experimenting with meditation and any kind of things that will remove them from the ruckus of the physical world. And as you have more and more people that can do that, I believe you're going to have more and more people that spirit's going to be able to present themselves.
Yeah, but I wonder if it's just like them being in the room. You know, most of the reports that we hear, you know, are fuzzy images, and sometimes they're clear, but it's usually for a fleeting, you know, few seconds.
Mine was there pretty long, and it was crystal clear, and...
Yeah, but you didn't have a conversation, right?
No, because I made the assumption that it was a different person until afterwards.
Hmm.
So, but I think if you know, but we do, you're right, we do get stories from lots of people that it's a huge spectrum. You get, they say they've seen someone, they hugged them, they touched them, they really thought they were alive, only to find out later that they were dead, down to a glowing light that just, you know, just exists in the room and doesn't follow any of the laws of science that we know for that light to have followed.
Yeah, there's also a TV series that's on It just started last month. I mean, I don't know whether or not it'll have the ratings to keep going, but we've watched the episodes. It's called A Gifted Man. I forget which network it's on, but the premise of the show is you have this this very gifted doctor who leads a very
materialistic life.
Yeah, materialistic life, and certainly doesn't believe in an afterlife. And P.S. His ex-wife dies and decides to frequent him very often, and the show is about how her views start to change the way he lives. She ran a free clinic, and he starts working with the poor and something. So it's a really interesting thing. And there they portray it like you would expect. She just appears, and he has involved conversations with her, and people look at him, and he has to usually hide because they think he's nuts because he's talking to himself. And so, again, it's the same thing. You know, Chris, I wonder how many people watch the show and say, wow, I just wish that I could talk to my loved one that way, you know, because there's virtually no, the way it's portrayed, there's no difference than them being here in the physical. You know?
But that's what the medium tells us. The mediums tell us that when we talk, that they are right alongside of us, which is also what some of the physicists tell us too. They're right alongside of us, so we should be talking to them as if they are right here because they are right here. And the mediums say they want to continue to be part of our lives, so engage them and talk to them and make them part of your life.
Yeah, well, certainly there is, you know, the theory that the, you know, this other plane of existence is, you know, can you can think of it as literally being a couple of inches from your face. You know, they are right there. It's just that it's very it's difficult for most of us to pierce that veil or pierce through that other dimension. But then you wonder why are some people, you know, able to do it and some not.
Well, what I think is interesting is yesterday we were fortunate enough to be at this networking day. The foundation had a table there, and we usually do this every year in Huntington in New York. And the population of the people that come through the room are usually older because it's during the day, whereas everybody else is working. But fabulous stories, you know, as we would engage people and we'd start talking about the afterlife and wonderful, one wonderful story after another. And we've been doing this for years. You know, at the beginning we were always getting that look sometimes from people, and now that doesn't seem to happen at all. Everybody had a story about what happened to them. There was a lovely lady there who was 91 years old, told us a story about what happened to her when she was two.
And she was two.
And she died. She had some sort of a whooping cough or something. She died, and she went to the other side, and she came back. And
talk about having these life-changing experiences that stay with you. This was 89 years prior, and she, you know,
and she was very happy to tell me the story.
Yeah. Well, you know, you come in, and you know, of course, you present a very safe and open environment, and it, you know, they may not be able to tell these stories at the history club or the Rotary club or whatever, you know. But now they certainly know that you're not going to judge them, and they're just busting to tell you these stories.
It was a wonderful crowd there that day. It was just fabulous.
Well, you know, talking about the other side, we're going to be doing a lot more of that with our guest, Lloyd Auerbach, when he comes back after the break. So let's go to the break, and then we'll get Professor Paranormal on with us, Lloyd Auerbach. So stay with us, and we'll talk a little bit more about the unseen world.
Suzanne Goode, an award-winning certified professional and master photographer, is the owner of Goode Photography, a studio located in Long Island, New York, for 25 years. She has devoted herself to creating timeless portraits and virtual paintings that capture the essence of a person in one single moment, forever lasting. She can use your photograph of a loved one or pet and transform it into a watercolor or canvas painting. You can view her work and email on her website, www.goodphotography.com.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.winbridge.org.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
For those just tuning in, our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. Our sponsor is the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.winbridge.org. Bob?
Well, we're happy to have Lloyd Auerbach back with us. He's the director of the Office of Paranormal Investigations, and he's on the faculty of Atlantic University. He's also the creator and principal instructor of the certificate program in parapsychological studies at HCH Institute in Lafayette, California. Lloyd wears many hats. He's a well-known parapsychologist, a professor, an author, a lecturer, a mentalist, a psychic entertainer, and now a professional chocolatier. He sits on the scientific advisory boards of Forever Family Foundation and the Winbridge Institute. He's also on the advisory board of the Rhine Research Center. He's authored eight books on the paranormal, and the latest being The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. Lloyd's website is also mindreader.com. Welcome, Lloyd.
Thanks very much.
And it's so nice to have you back with us. And, you know, one thing I wanted to start off with, and we obviously talk to a lot of people at the foundation who are bereaved and have lost a loved one, and they often tell us that, you know, their greatest wish would be to see their loved one again. Mm-hmm. And yet, many people, you know, when they do have an experience of seeing an apparition or a ghost, say that they're fearful, they're scared, you know. So why do you think that you have this longing to see someone, and then when it happens, why do people have fearful experiences?
Well, I think there are cultural reasons across the world, for that matter, about ghosts, why we're afraid of ghosts. The telling of the ghost story is an ancient tradition because people like to be scared. And so there's this innate piece of, well, it's in the dark, it's unexplained, it must be something bad or something that's going to hurt me, even though it may be one's loved one. And I think an element of it is how the person might appear, whether they kind of like show up all of a sudden, and that can shock you, or whether you kind of get some sort of warning somehow. But what's really unfortunate is that the crop of paranormal TV shows is really, really pushing the edge on all this and making it seem that this stuff is really something to be afraid of, when in fact the majority of people who have ghost experience have apparitional experiences, like 95% or more of them have them with loved ones who have just passed. They may only see them once or experience them once, and that's it. But those are rarely ever fear-inducing for people, unless they have a religious background that says that ghosts are evil.
Yeah. Well, I would imagine a lot also has to do with the fact that we rely so much on what we've been, how we've been educated, and
right.
we only believe what our five senses, tell us, and now it doesn't fit into this paradigm of how could this be possible? But I'm glad you mentioned these ghost hunting shows, because and talking about fear. So here you're watching the so-called professionals, and something happens and they act spooked. So are they playing to the cameras, or do ghost investigators often get scared?
Well, I think the real professionals do not.
Yeah.
These guys, maybe, some of these folks, they may be now professional TV stars, but they're not professional researchers or field investigators.
Right.
They're certainly getting paid more than me for doing it, but they're doing it for the camera. They're doing it for TV. I really couldn't tell you if any of them who have run from whatever's going on were actually afraid or not. Because, I know I've met some of them, but it's kind of hard to tell how much of that, knowing that they do play to the cameras, knowing that the producers cut these shows in certain ways, whether the investigators like it or not, they fake things from time to time. They edit in such a way that it looks like something's happening when something was not happening. So, they could have been running from a big spider that was going to bite them, or a rat or something like that, and made it look like, the producers could have made it look like they were running from a ghost.
Yeah, it is TV.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Well, so when we talk about apparitions and people seeing a loved one, and it's usually a very comforting experience, people, when they describe such things, they never seem to use the term ghost. What is the difference between a ghost and an apparition of a loved one?
Well, the word apparition is a term that we've used in parapsychology and before that psychical research since pretty much the beginning, since the 19th century. And it's a cleaner term, because when you use the word ghost, in different cultures, the English word ghost, or Geist in German, or the variations in other languages, have different history in terms of what people think ghosts actually are. Because in some places, a ghost is a part of a person's soul that's sticking around. In some places, a ghost is an omen of their own death. You see a ghost of someone and you're going to die. So it really depends on the mythology of the dead that has arisen over the centuries. And some of it's from, thousands of years ago. But I think most Americans talk about ghosts, most Westerners talk about ghosts, we kind of think of the TV and movie, the topper thing, as you were mentioning
right.
earlier in the show.
Yeah.
This is the consciousness or spirit of someone who's sticking around after death. And I know that some mediums make a difference between a ghost or apparition and a spirit, as in spirit being someone who's passed over, and the ghost or apparition is someone who's still here, earth, what people often call earthbound. So I think it really depends on where people are coming from in this.
Mm. Well, that is something that we hear very often. A lot of the mediums don't necessarily subscribe to the theory that there are spirits that are earthbound, but yet there's tons of channeled literature that and reports that seem to indicate that people that may have lived a materialistic life or have really valued their physical possessions like to hang around, and I guess that may be part of the explanation for a ghost, right? Is that the same thing as
that's,
being earthbound, right?
Yeah, you might say earthbound, they're squatting here.
They
simply haven't moved on. But sometimes what we find, the people I've worked with, the psychics I've worked with, the witnesses that I've talked to who have had conversations sometimes with the ghosts, there's a myriad of reasons that the ghosts offer for why they're still here. It runs from being in denial that they're even dead to being afraid of what's next. Perhaps they were raised in a tradition that says you're going to hell, or that they were raised in a tradition that doesn't really talk about what's next, and they don't know what to do, so they don't move on. Sometimes it's not because they're attached to material possessions, but because they're attached to people, to their family, and that seems to happen quite a bit. That they just don't want to leave their family behind, or that they feel like they need to watch out for their family members, for a spouse or someone else. So there's really as many reasons as there are people is how many reasons there actually are.
You wonder why. I mean, the most strong emotion, you know, is love. So, I mean, you wonder why more people aren't hanging around, you know, to try to be comforting their loved
ones. That's a really good question. And I tend to think that there are some environmental conditions, either at or around the time of death, that has something to do with it, too. Mm-hmm. And there also, I can't say yes or no to this, but there could be spiritual, you know, divine, some other agency at work that says you're not ready as well.
Right. Yeah. Now, you've obviously participated in many countless investigations of different paranormal phenomena, and I know from reading your books that the vast majority can usually be attributed to certain, you know, physical causes. But when you, as a professional investigator, when you come upon something that defies explanation, so do you get excited?
Absolutely. I mean, to me, anything that happens here, and we have a lot of cases where there's a mix of normal explanations and psychic explanations for these things, they can get very, very interesting. And whenever anything happens, especially if I'm there to witness something, or even witness someone else having the experience, it makes me more interested. It doesn't freak me out. It really just kind of triggers my my Sherlock Holmes syndrome. I want to know why it's happening. I want to know what's going on. I want to be the detective.
Yeah, which is a perfect segue into your latest book, The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. So in the book, I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm sure you go to certain sites that are known to be, you know, haunted.
Mm-hmm. Let me mention the book was co-authored by Annette Martin.
Yes.
Who's a wonderful psychic medium who passed away a month ago, rather suddenly, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So Annette was somebody I'd worked with since 1994, and what we did in this book is we went to places. In the book, we kind of cover not that many places. People are surprised at how few places we cover, because we wanted to cover places in depth as opposed to just giving you, here's where you can go to, and here's the story.
Right.
It's not just the story of the location. It's our story. It is us going and investigating. It's what we found. And, in fact, there are transcripts of my conversations with Annette in some of the locations, and even, what she's picking up, and even her side of the conversation with a ghost, if there's a ghost, somebody actually there. The comment we're getting from most people, just generally, is that they feel like they're there with us, kind of like riding along with us, which was the intention of the book.
Hmm.
Yes.
And I would imagine it's enormously beneficial to have a medium along within the investigation, because you may not be able to pick up certain things that are important to the case, and the medium has an easy time with it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, you know, in most of the private home cases, I work as much as I can with the individuals who are reporting the apparition, the ones who are seen or heard. And it's not always seeing. Sometimes they hear the apparition, or they feel a presence, or something else is going on, because they've already had the experience. But where the psychic medium comes in, psychic or medium, is kind of as that piece of technology, I want to call it human sensing technology, that actually is designed to find these things, because none of the tech the ghost hunters use, myself included, is designed for that. People are. And that the medium can actually help both communicate, but also just simply pick up on what may be really going on. Because a lot of times, cases that Annette and I went on, she would immediately get hits that it's more of an imprint. It has nothing to do with an actual conscious entity. It's not a discarnate entity. It's really an imprint of some past event. And
mm-hmm.
she was very good at discerning those things, which is very important for us. She also was very good at reading the people. So sometimes, cases would be more about the people, and there really wouldn't be anything paranormal happening. And so that's very, very helpful as well. So you can have an electromagnetic field detector there, but you can't ask it questions and expect to get answers, especially from the ghost.
Yeah, and I'm on the subject of the equipment, because that I think there's a whole generation of people today that they probably believe that certain, you know, energy meters and devices were invented for the sole purpose of identifying ghosts. You know?
Yeah, I know. They, especially since they're marked as ghost meters and such, and
yeah.
It's really sad that TV shows have really kind of created this whole mystique around the equipment and the whole misconception around it. They have no idea why anybody started using this stuff, because
yeah.
It is based in science, but it's based in environmental science, connecting it to people's experiences. We always have to start and finish with the people, with the witnesses, with the people who have the experiences.
When you were working with Annette and some other mediums that you've worked with in the past, is part of your process to have the medium like invite spirit to appear? Is that helpful?
Yes, it is. You know, we go in, and there are times that, I'll give you an example. I'm working with a place, it's a shop in Berkeley, California, called Spun Sugar. And this is a cake decorating supply house, which also sells chocolate supplies. So this is actually where I buy my bulk chocolate for my business, for making chocolate. And one day, they happened to notice on my credit card, it said Professor Paranormal, and they asked me about that and started telling me about the ghost there. So I brought in, after doing a preliminary bit of interviewing, I brought in a medium, a psychic friend of mine, and she picked up an awful lot of information on the apparition, on the ghost, but she got a sense that the ghost wasn't present at the time, and she tried to invite her in, and for whatever reason, she wasn't getting a response. But that's something we would typically do. In this case, Betty was probably off doing something else at the time, I guess.
Yeah.
But we would certainly invite that. And if I can get the family members or the people living in the home, for example, to be the ones to do the invitation because they've already had the experience, get them past their fear, that's what we would do also. But we definitely invite them to come and communicate, and that can work. Unlike the TV shows, we treat them as people and not as objects of derision, which apparently some of these shows seem to like to do.
Yeah. Well, we also hear a lot about, you know, the so-called experimenter effect. So, I mean, if you were investigating a paranormal activity and you really didn't believe in any of it, I guess the chances are probably less likely that you're going to get any spirits to cooperate.
Yeah, I think that may be probably more likely than the guys who run in there and start yelling for, you know, come get me, attack me.
Right. Yeah, I've seen that.
You know, it's funny, I've talked to a lot of the amateurs who want to play their electronic voice phenomena for me, and many of them talk about getting these, you know, words like get out, and they're really, you know, that scares them a little bit. It's like, look, it's an evil ghost. I said, no, it's a ghost. You went in there, you were very rude to the ghost, the ghost told you to get out.
Right.
I would do that.
Right.
I would do that, too.
Yeah. If you're rude to ghosts, they're going to be rude back to you. So
right, makes sense.
Those are people too.
Exactly. And hauntings. I mean, hauntings, as you would explain, they're mostly psychic imprints that are left at a particular location, and very often it's I guess the information that just continues to play on a loop, and people are able to. You know, some people are able to sense that. So, I mean, would the distinction be like an apparition would be a conscious entity, whereas in a haunting there would be no consciousness involved?
Right. That's it. That's kind of exactly what it is. I think that you can put it, I can give you an example. If you walked into a conference room, there's a big video monitor there, and there on the monitor is a friend of yours who actually is in an office 3,000 miles away, and as you walk in, the person's talking, and it sounds like he's talking to you directly, but you talk back, and for whatever reason, you find out that, A, he's not responding, which means either that perhaps there's no actual two-way communication, but in this case, it's a video loop. It's just simply a tape that's playing over and over again. But if you walked in and got communication back, then you actually have what looks to be a real-time connection, and that's what we're dealing with here. The hauntings are the recordings, and the apparitional situations are people. So it's kind of like the old question, is it live or is it Memorex?
Yeah, one of the most fascinating things to me still remains, I know that the consensus of the scientists regarding, like, poltergeists is that it's, PK phenomena, usually caused by one of the living people in the home, if it's a home. But the very fact that this emotion or intention or whatever you want to call it is able to levitate furniture and move it is to me more fascinating than communication with the dead. Isn't that something that interests scientists? I realize it's spontaneous in nature. It's very hard to study. But have you come across cases where you've witnessed that?
Not big pieces of furniture, but I absolutely have seen both poltergeist and apparition cases where there was PK phenomena happening. There's a qualitative difference typically. In poltergeist cases, it seems to be very chaotic, as if somebody is letting off steam, whereas in apparition cases, it's very deliberate movement and rarely ever destructive. So I've seen both situations where people have done that. And I used to work with a guy do research with Martin Kaden, who was the late science fiction and science author, lived in Florida, and wrote about him in my 96 book, Mind Over Matter. And Marty was able to move objects under very well-controlled conditions. Pretty much every time he sat down, although sometimes if you asked if there were five objects and you told him to move number three, he'd end up moving number four. So there's still no way for that one to move, but it wouldn't be the right one. And that's the problem with this kind of PK, is it seems to be subject to serious limitations of human performance psychology, kind of like sports. You psych yourself out of it. You don't believe it's going to happen, and the unconscious doesn't have that problem.
Wow, so now we need PK psychologists, just like sports psychologists.
Right? Exactly. And actually, we just need sports psychologists, because so much of it is very, very, very much the same. And it kind of always surprises, well, it doesn't surprise me, but when the skeptics talk about, well, people can't do it all the time, you're making an excuse because people can't do it on command, and it's like, well, a good batting average for a baseball player is batting 500.
Yeah.
That's not batting 1,000.
Right.
If you can hit a home run every single time, that's batting 1,000. So, and that's an extraordinary, 500 is an extraordinary record. So why do you expect anyone to do anything every single time you sit down? Nobody can do that.
That's true. It's very true. People just don't understand that. When we talk about also this PK phenomena, I've read a lot about, and we've interviewed a whole bunch of people that have been privy to sitting in on these physical mediumship sessions. And some researchers, are pretty well convinced that the phenomena is real and coming from spirit, and others, admit that the phenomena is real, but they attribute it all to PK from the living. So it's a pretty fine line to try to. It's troublesome from a research point of view to actually figure it out.
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a philosophical issue too, and really, it's a very, very fundamental question that is very difficult to pull apart. And ultimately, if you're religious, you could say, well, it's all from God, so we can't even look at it because He's doing it all and playing with us.
Yeah, that's a good cop out.
Yeah, it is. I've actually heard people, some people use that, but. From surprising, not from my colleagues, but from other surprising sources, and
right.
you can kind of say that if you have a particular subject who can always do it, it's more likely that person than you, because now you're working with other subjects who can't do it at all, and you have just as high an expectation in that situation.
Right.
But it may be that you and that person are doing it together, so it's kind of an experimenter subject effect, not just an experimenter effect.
Right.
So it's very, very muddy.
Yeah, and it's very, as is most of the things that you study, right? Nothing's clear. You wish it was more clear-cut sometimes.
Yeah. Right. In the poltergeist cases, it's a lot clearer sometimes because we can get it to stop by identifying who is the most likely person as the agent in the house, and working with that person for a very short time stops the phenomena, and that makes it more likely that it was that person that was doing it. They're unconscious, then, just simply because, from a practical standpoint, you had X do something different and it stopped. So
right.
Most likely that's what's going on.
And we are talking with Lloyd Auerbach, sometimes known as Professor Paranormal, and his website is mindreader.com. His latest book is The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. We're going to go to a break, and then when we come back, we're going to continue more of this conversation. So stay with us, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The American Association of Electronic Voice Phenomena has always been international and concerned with more than just EVP. To better serve the public, the AAEVP is now Association Transcommunication, or ATRANSC. Their new website is ATRANSC.org, and their motto is Objective Evidence of Survival. The directors believe people should know that death is not dying, and what we learn now applies to what we will learn hereafter.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
When grieving the loss of a loved one, sometimes a hug is just what you need. Hugs from Heaven are lightly weighted shoulder wraps that are made from the fabric of your loved one's clothing. Your clothing can also be made into memory pillows and sachets. Each Hugs from Heaven is handmade with loving care and is as unique as your loved one's spirit. Visit us at hugsfromheaven.com. That's hugs, spelled with a Z, from heaven.com. Who couldn't use a hug?
It is with great pleasure that we announce the formation of the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential. Dr. Julie Beischel, Director of Research at Winbridge and one of the premier investigators in the field of mediumship research, reports that the team at Winbridge will continue pursuing the many unanswered questions that remain in the field of afterlife science. Please go to www.windbridge.org to learn more about this groundbreaking research institute. That's www.windbridge.org.
For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you could find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
If you're just tuning in, our guest tonight is Lloyd Auerbach. This show is sponsored by the Winbridge Institute for Applied Research in Human Potential and can be found on the web at www.windbridge.org. If you are a business interested in advertising on our show, please contact us at radio@foreverfamilyfoundation.org or call 631-425-7707. Before we get back to our show, we have a few important foundation updates for our listeners. Some of our supporters write to say they love the radio show. They want to see it continue. They love the work of Forever Family Foundation, but they just don't have extra dollars these days to send our way. Even though we are a 100% volunteer not-for-profit organization, it still takes a lot of money to do the work we do, and yet we want to do so much more. So this is how everyone can help without sending us money. Go to foreverfamilyfoundation.org and apply for the Visa credit card. Visa will make a donation to us for each card that is taken out. and each time the card is used, a portion of that charge is donated back to Forever Family Foundation. But you don't have to stop there. If your shopping takes you to the Internet, consider shopping at Amazon.com, but first use the link on the Forever Family Foundation website, and again, a portion of your spending comes back to support our work. Now, if you don't see what you want on Amazon, then sign up with iGive.com and name Forever Family Foundation as the charity of your choice. Then search iGive.com for your items. For each search, we receive a donation. And when you find what you're looking for, a portion of what you spend is again donated back to Forever Family Foundation. So please take a few moments when you shop to show us that you care. Our Holidays Past raffle with five chances to win a one-hour medium reading is going to be drawn on December 23rd, and there are only 100 tickets sold as of this date. So if you do the math, you can see your odds of winning are supercalifragilistic, and you should send in your $5 for one chance, or you get five chances for $20. You can visit our website for more information and more denominations, or you could just enter the raffle by sending your check to Forever Family Foundation, 222 Atlantic Avenue, Oceanside, New York, 11572. We want to thank everybody for signing up for both our annual fundraiser night of mediums and our annual conference, Is There Chocolate in the Afterlife, for November 11th and 12th. They are both sold out. If you'd like to be on a wait list, call the office at 631-425-7707. And our Holidays Past event is in four locations this year. December 3rd, we will have Joanne Gerber in Bethel, Connecticut. Also on December 3rd, Janet Nowahovic will be in Pompton Lakes, New Jersey. On December 10th, we have Angelina Diana in Natick, Massachusetts, with afterlife advocate Dave Kane. And the December 17th event with Long Island mediums Teresa Caputo in Millville, New York, is sold out. These are $25 a seat for members, $35 for non-members. You can reserve now. Remember, these seats fill quickly. Back to you, Bob.
And thank you, and thanks for staying with us, Lloyd. We are talking with Lloyd Auerbach, whose website is mindreader.com. Lloyd, I've learned from you, actually, that, you know, that being a psychic investigator, you not only have to be a detective, but as you mentioned, you have to be an observer of human behavior. So, I mean, your background as both a parapsychologist and a mentalist, I would imagine that serves you well in this regard.
It certainly does. You know, I started out just performing magic and getting into magic, which deals, of course, with the psychology of deception and how people perceive, which is really, much as I'd like to perform, because I love performing, and really that's what got me performing in magic, it was fascinating to me how people observe things themselves and how people misunderstand occurrences that they run into or experiences that they have, and that's kind of what magic takes advantage of, and mentalism too, to some extent. But it really helped me not to find frauds. I mean, people say you're a magician so you can find fakes. It's like, no, it's really about using that know-how to understand how people misunderstand the things that they're experiencing and how they kind of label them as paranormal. And that's been much, much helpful, very, very helpful over the years.
Mm. I would imagine that your expertise in that regard has been helpful to fellow colleagues in the science world. Right? I mean, who better to bounce things off of than somebody that knows the tricks? You know?
Yeah, from time to time I've done some consulting with various folks, including people you know.
Right.
I brought together a group of mentalists to actually look over some of Gary Schwartz's early work with Gary there as well. And which was really helpful, I think, to him. And just, I mean, looking at experiments, I've been doing that since I first started at the ASPR in 1982, working with researchers at various labs to kind of look at the experiments and see if there was a way that people might get around them. And, you know, it's really interesting that magicians are not the end-all to fraud, because when you're talking about trickery in experiments, if it's not a researcher, you know, we see this in medical research all the time, people faking data. I think it happens significantly less, if at all, in our field these days. But the other issue is a hacker could get into your computer and screw up your results.
Mm, that's true.
You know, and that's not magic. That's computer hacking. Yeah. Somebody could do a little breaking and entering and tamper with the equipment in the laboratory and set themselves up for fraud and things like that. So it's not even, we don't have to worry about magicians so much. We have to worry about the other folks who might want to... I guess you could say sabotage or experiments.
Uh-huh. We, I mean, I mentioned a few times the term parapsychology. That may be a term that many listeners are not familiar with. So, I mean, what does a parapsychologist study?
We study the range of psychic experiences, or in general, the experiences of the human mind, of consciousness, as it on its own, or apparently on its own, can connect with information outside the range of our normal senses and logical inference. We call that extrasensory perception. It can, how the mind can actually affect matter and energy, including our own bodies. That would be called psychokinesis, or mind over matter, mind-matter interaction these days. And of course, at the root of it all, and really at the root of the tree of psychical research and parapsychology, is the idea of survival of bodily death, that consciousness can exist on its own and survive the death of the body. The process of communication still, so if a spirit communicates with someone, a medium or someone else, it's still part of this whole process, because that would be, by definition, telepathy. It's mind-to-mind communication with a medium.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of what we study with people in the laboratory really speaks to what's going on with spirit communication and vice versa.
So for the most part, you wouldn't consider yourself to be a parapsychologist if you had traditional materialist reductionist thinking and believed that the brain was the generator of consciousness. I mean, the parapsychologists are already believe otherwise, right?
Well, not all of us, not all the folks in my field. I mean, there are some in my field who do believe, who are more coming in from the materialist reductionist perspective, and actually believe that the consciousness is kind of a phenomenon of the mind. It's an epiphenomenon of the mind. It is, it's there. It's resident in the brain. Sorry, excuse me, not the mind, but the brain. And they don't necessarily think so much about life after death, which is where a lot of the argument about experimenter psi and what we call super psi, or what Julie Beischel has now taken to using Michael Sutta's term, somatic psi, body psi.
Mm-hmm.
Psi being the term that covers all psychic abilities, psychic phenomena. And survival psi being that thing that where ghosts or apparitions and other folks are connecting with either with us, or they are moving objects affecting the material world. That would be psi from their side rather than from the body. But it's definitely a philosophical discussion in parapsychology and even in psychical research for how much the medium is actually pulling information, for example, from the minds of the sitters, or from information that's out there, or from the Akashic Records, if you believe in that. And
right.
Their own unconscious kind of creates the idea of getting this information from a spirit as opposed to from the minds of others. So that's the materialist explanation for that.
Yeah, I often wonder, you know, so when people report, you know, seeing an apparition, I mean, I'm open to the possibility that this discarnate entity, is imprinting, somehow imprinting, their image, their mind with an image of the discarnate entity. Or I'm also open to the fact that maybe this discarnate entity is actually using energies that are present in this physical realm to make themselves manifest, to appear. So we just don't know.
Yeah, although we do know that because there are so many experiences people have where there are multiple witnesses or multiple people around, but not everybody sees the apparition, or situations where one person sees and hears the apparition, another person only hears the voice, it's unlikely that it's a manifestation in visible form or in any form, but it's more likely it's a projection from the mind of that discarnate entity.
Mm.
So we're seeing, you know, you ever wonder why ghosts have clothes? I mean, we're seeing what they think of, how they think of themselves.
Yeah.
And what's interesting is you can have, there are cases on record, and I even had cases like this myself, where there are more than one person seeing the ghost from different angles. So if I'm in front of the ghost and he's facing me, I would expect to see him full on. The person behind the ghost should see his back. But in fact, the person behind the ghost sees the face of the ghost also. In other words, they're getting the exact same image I am from the same perspective I am, even though they're in a different place in the room.
Mm.
But that would indicate it's not a visual phenomena also, that it's more of a connection with the mind of the apparition.
Mm. I remember from one of your presentations a number of years back, it stuck with me. You showed some film of a on a ship, and there was somebody, one of the seamen, that was describing to you, you know, what he saw, and that there was a ghost, and he saw the ghost regularly, and it, out of the other side of his mouth, he says, "But I don't believe in any of this stuff." But you know, I guess it's typical of a lot of the public. You know, they even after they witness it, they still don't believe it. Right?
Well, I mean, to his credit, this guy was the curator of the USS Hornet Museum at the time, Alan McCain.
Okay.
Former Navy SEAL, actually.
Right.
And he knows what he saw. It actually was witnessed by someone else. What he didn't believe in necessarily, he wasn't a disbeliever, but he wasn't a believer in ghosts or in life after death.
Right.
But here's what he saw. So he reported what he saw, which with very, you know, clinical description, which is great because that's a good witness. I mean, that's a much better witness than a believer or a disbeliever in some regard.
Yeah, yeah.
And then after, in the interview, what didn't show up in that little video clip you saw was, as we finished up, he pulled me and my videographer aside and said, "I know you guys work at the Moss Beach Distillery, which is a restaurant south of San Francisco. You want me to tell you about my experience when I was a kid there?" Because he had, you know, I didn't believe it's a ghost, but here's what happened, and he had that when he was 12 years old, and it was something that was seen by his mother as well. And so, you know, he had these experiences. He just didn't put him in a category, which again made him a really good witness, especially when he had someone backing him up.
Yeah, and that's one of the major keys in these investigations, right? Finding a reliable witness.
Yeah. Because you know, unfortunately, fear makes you misperceive things also, and people have different perspectives on things. So it's sometimes hard. You know, when I get a call from someone who says that I'm seeing a ghost in my house, I think we've got a ghost here, and that's the only witness, there's no one else who's had the experience, especially if there are other people living in the house, it makes it very difficult to discern at all whether that person's having a real experience or may have a psychological issue, certainly not from a phone call.
Mm.
When there are other people in the house who've had the experience, unless they're, of course, just humoring the individual, then we at least can say that there's more likely something going on that is causing them to have the experience, whether it is a ghost or some misperception that they're all picking up on.
Mm.
So we have to kind of believe that's where a medium also can come in very handy, even remotely, looking at a location from a remote spot.
So what advice would you give to someone who contacts you, not necessarily, you know, for an investigation, but to tell you that they saw, you know, an apparition and they didn't know what to make of it, and what should they do? And what kind of an answer do you give?
Well, I think first, if the apparition appears again, I was lecturing in Phoenix last night, and someone actually asked me that question, what do you do? I said, well, you actually ask the apparition, who are you and what can I do for you?
Oh, okay.
People are always like, why are you here? Why are you here? I think if you posit it like, what can I do for you? What do you need? Rather than kind of being confrontational.
Yeah.
What has been reported, which is really kind of funny sometimes, is how the apparition often looks startled, according to the people.
Just scaring ghosts, right?
Didn't scare him, but Mike, like, oh, I don't know what to tell you. I don't know. So it really does, first of all, it puts a little humor into the situation, of course, but it really does bring out the fear. I mean, cuts the fear out, because now you're talking about a conversation. And that actually helps with communication, it helps with the process, it helps setting the scene for keeping track of what's actually going on. It just makes it a little easier. So that's what I would tell. Don't run. Ask what you can do for them.
Yeah, and of course, judging by watching TV shows, most people would probably say, you need to move to the light.
Yeah, which is like, you know, how about, what do you need? Do you need a, you know, because whatever they need may not be simple as telling them to move to the light. When I work with Annette and other psychics, we don't try to move people to the light. If they want it, we tell them about the light, we can give them that option, but they may not be done yet. They need to finish up what they're doing, whatever it is.
Well, that's an interesting
sometimes
point. Don't send everybody to the light before they're ready to go to the light.
They will.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But,
yeah,
goes
I mean,
we will too.
and there may be, again, there may be a plan. They may need to finish something. They may need to learn something more about this world before they move on. There's any number of things that could be part of what's important to them. And if you were a psychic or a medium pushing someone into light, I mean, somebody's going kicking and screaming, there's a problem, I think, an ethical issue in what you're doing at that point. Even because how do you know it's better on the other side for that individual?
That's right.
Exactly true.
Yeah. Well, we have been talking with Lloyd Auerbach. Lloyd's website is mindreader.com. And incidentally, on the site, there are many different articles and talks about his various descriptions of his various talks and lectures and coming events and all the books. And I know we've got a few books up on the Forever Family Foundation website with links to Amazon. So I encourage you to pick up the latest one, The Ghost Detective's Guide to Haunted San Francisco. We're honored that Lloyd will be doing a presentation at our upcoming conference. I wish we had more seats because it is sold out. I guess the people could put themselves on a waiting list if you want to call the office. But hopefully you'll be able to catch Lloyd at future lectures and demonstrations that he gives throughout the country. And Lloyd, thanks so much, and we really look forward to being with you again soon. And I forgot to mention Lloyd's late endeavor. He makes some outrageous chocolate. I've fortunately tasted some, and it's to die for, so to speak. And do you have that up on the mindreader.com, or is it
It's at the other site, which is hauntedbychocolate.com.
Okay, haunted by chocolate, just the way it sounds, .com, so you might want to pay that a visit. Thanks again, Lloyd, and we'll talk to you soon.
We'll see you soon. Thanks.
All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
A wonderful interview, as always. We now ask our listeners to please join us in our Healing Energy Circle prayer. May the universe create a channel of healing energy from our participating listeners, sending that energy to those who are in need of recovery of the physical body, spirit, and mind. As we visualize the healing light upon Vicki Steffi, Judith Lachman, Wendy Lippo, Kathy Ward, Michael Tim, and anybody else who does need healing around the world. Now let's give energy of love and gratitude to the waters and all the living creatures in Mexico Gulf by praying like this. To the waters, whales, dolphins, pelicans, fishes, shellfishes, planktons, coral, algae, and all creatures in our Gulf of Mexico, I apologize. Please forgive me. Thank you. I love you. That was by Masuro Omoto back on May 9th, 2010. And the Gulf still needs our loving, kind attention drawn towards it. And now it's time for us to say,
our loved ones are only a heartbeat away.
And science is going to prove it.
Good night, everyone.